The committee will come to order. There is a quorum present. Good morning and welcome back to everyone. We do have a new member to introduce here today. I'd like to introduce Representative Chad Anderson to the committee, and if he wants to introduce himself, he's more than welcome to do that. Otherwise, he can take the wise approach and be quiet like the other good members we have. Perfect. Thank you. We also have a couple of new pages to introduce to the committee this year. We have Laura Lee and Will. If you'd stand up and introduce yourselves briefly.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Sorry for the early start time. We also have a new committee legislative assistant, Kyle Burnt. I always do that. He'll be with us for the next few weeks to help facilitate the committee hearings. So without further ado, we will take up House File 2607, Representative Kelly's bill. Representative Kelly, welcome to the committee. I'll move House File 2607 to be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. We have the bill before us. I understand that there is an A1-1 amendment to the author's amendment. I will move the A1-1. Representative Kelly, when you're ready, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill has been quite a work in process. I think the first time I sat before the committee was 8 years ago, quite frankly, when we were working on this bill, and because of a moratorium on construction of new nursing homes at that point in time. It's been a great learning experience, but it is also a great opportunity for us, because what we were looking at that time was a process and a system that would put nursing homes more of a almost like a campus setting is what we were looking at. So because we knew one of the biggest fears and stress levels of individuals as they age is this stress of moving from place to place. So an opportunity came down in Goodhue County, actually, where we had the opportunity to consolidate some of the nursing homes and build a new nursing home right next to the hospital at the time. So in essence, becoming kind of a campus situation. So some of you who've been here for a while actually have heard this over the years. But in the interim here, as hospitals changed, we went from actually a Fairview system to a Mayo system. I won't bore you with all those details, but in the end, what we're looking at here today is simply trying to make the math work and make the language work. We've been working with the department throughout this entire time. With me is Kevin Rymanowski from he's the CFO of Benedictine Health Systems. I'll let him go into the details of it, but what we are trying to do throughout this bill and the language that is being changed today is really make the math work. We've got the language all together with the department, but we're looking at the way property rates and things have been formulated, so we need to make these changes to finally get to the construction point. And I'll let Mr. Rymanowski take it from here.
Mr. Rymanowski, welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to be here. I'm Kevin Rymanowski, Chief Financial Officer of Benedictine Health System. Over the past 8 years, as Representative Kelly said, and with his help and others, Benedictine Health System has been successful in three different occasions coming in getting provisions passed that would allow us to reinvest in our existing nursing facilities. First one was a project in Owatonna. That Coda Living Community actually opened up in 2013, brand new nursing facility. Our second time was here was the project down in Goodhue County in Red Wing. And then after that, with discussions with the Department of Human Services, we decided let's stop doing these facility-specific ones and created a generic bill that allowed facilities across the state to consolidate, capture those savings, and build that into their property payment rate. And so that so far we've done the with those bills, we've done the Owatonna campus, as I mentioned. We've also done a 40-unit addition or post-acute addition to our Serenity Care Center in White Bear Lake, and a complete renovation of that building. You know, so we've invested about $30 million of funding so far that have been, you know, that has been that we could afford because of the provisions that we passed in previously. right now we're in the process of finalizing the planning stages of the replacement facility in Red Wing, changing from being on the campus of the hospital, actually reducing the number, or changing the number of beds that we're going to be downsizing from 69 to 85, and basically renovating and creating a whole new resident section of our existing facility down there. We also have plans for a renovation, complete renovation of our 90-bed nursing facility in St. Paul, Marion, Serenity Marion, St. Paul, and are also looking at consolidation renovation of some facilities up in northern Minnesota. So we got about $40 million of renovation plans that we are in the plans or in the process of doing and hopefully trying to get this year. What the provisions that we've done in the past have all approached and added the increase in reimbursement to the property rate. And the payment reform last year dealt with the facility's operating payment rates, but really pushed property system off into future sessions, in that, which really creates a period of unknown for us. And so what the provisions of this amendment really are, it's just moving the geography of those rate increases from the property rate to the another part of the rate, the external fixed rate. So that will ensure us that the $30 million of investments we've already made will be able to continue to pay for the debt that we've incurred on those, and also give us some comfort as we're looking at doing this $40 million of additional investments in the next 12 months or so, that we will have the rates needed to pay that debt, and the banks will get a lot of comfort from that. If we don't have this, I can't, you know, a banker's not going to loan me money because they're not going to be sure where the new property payment system is. So all this is really just a geography, moving the increases that have already been there from the property rate to the external fixed rate. And then also some minor adjustments to the Red Wing legislation, just to specific legislation, just to highlight what we're actually going to be doing, changing the number of beds that we're downsizing from 69 to 85. And then making one other tweak to make it revenue neutral. So that's basically what we're proposing here.
All right, are there any questions for Mr. Rymanowski? Representative Considine.
I'm sorry, you may have answered this before I got here. Apologize for being late, Mr. Chair. Are you having problems staffing, getting staff?
Mr. Rymanowski.
Are we having problems staffing? Yes, everywhere. The impact of the nursing home reform that was passed last year is improving that. And throughout our facilities, we have 26 facilities in Minnesota. So, I mean, everyone's had problems in one way or another. But the rate increases are helping and are bringing people back into the profession. So,
all right, Representative. Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Rymanowski?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kelly.
We do have an oral amendment. It's brought to us by the department, and they've been extremely helpful. It's just one number on line 3.35. And the number should be changed from 57.1 to 57.2.
Thank you.
You would be kind enough to move that.
Okay, I would move then an oral amendment on line 3.35 to change the number of 57.1 to 57.2. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Okay, any other testimony to this matter? Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to ask Representative Kelly, since you, the technical amendment that you just brought up, can we assume that the department is all fine with this, that it doesn't change any policies, that, you know, it doesn't have any other impact other than just what we're hearing about this morning?
All right, Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling.
Representative Kelly.
Actually, the department is here. Mr. Held is here from the department. He's the one that gave us that, so I assume he's okay with it.
Right, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't mean just that little technical piece we did. I mean the bill itself.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling.
Representative Kelly.
This is exactly how this bill has come to. We actually pre-filed the bill to make sure that it was here, and then with working with the department, that's where all the technical corrections came from. Correct.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, but I know they'll give you technical help, even if they don't agree with what you're doing. So I just want to assure us that the department is at least neutral on this and that it doesn't change anything more than just this.
Less than 15 minutes into session this year, and we get to hear from Mr. Bob Held. Please introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, I'm Bob Held from the Department of Human Services. The department has no objections to this bill. It's really just making some changes to existing law that, you know, the part where we move to external fixed from property makes good sense. Increasing the number of beds that close in Goodhue County would have a fiscal effect, but we've accounted for that in the amendment that was just done.
Okay.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Held.
Any other questions for Mr. Held? Seeing none, is there anyone else who would like to testify to the amendment? The amendment as amended, excuse me. Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment as amended signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Representative Kelly, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the time this morning, and this has been, a very good effort in trying to make the way we provide care and the way it looks into the future. This is something that actually Representative Thiessen and I worked on from the start as well. So I think this has been well received, and I look forward to how this becomes more of an emblem of how we and a beacon for how we deliver this care in the future. So thank you for your support.
All right, thank you. Any final questions for Representative Kelly? Seeing none, then I will renew my motion that House File 2607, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion prevails, and House File 2607 is re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. Thank you, Representative Kelly.
Chair and members.
Okay, next we'll take up House File 2497. Representative Peterson, if you could make your way down. Okay, Representative Peterson, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 2497, that it be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections Policy. We have the bill before us, and I understand that there is a delete all amendment, the DE1. I will move the DE1 amendment, and as we go through this, again, members, the bill is being referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Election Policy. That's the motion, and so we will try to keep the conversation today to the issues dealing with aging and long-term care as much as we can. Representative Peterson, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it's appropriate, but there is also a technical amendment. It's an A1 amendment that just deletes county and inserts municipality. If you'd like me to take it up at GovOps, I can certainly do that. But
there is, since this is your first stop, Representative Peterson, we want you to get the bill in the form that you want it. There is a technical amendment, members, to the DE1 amendment. It's the A1 amendment. The written amendment was submitted after the amendment deadline. However, because it's a one-word technical amendment from House Research, if there's no objection from members, I would like to move the A1 amendment. Okay. Is there any discussion to the A1 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Peterson, to the DE1 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And also, I do want to point out that we do have Breakfast of Champions over here to be shared by all so that you're well nourished as we discuss this very important thing. And the thing that I'm excited about this is, you know, do you want to lower healthcare costs? Do you want to provide better quality care? Do you want to help families and our elderly? Do you want a solution to the silver tsunami? And guess what? It doesn't even cost the state a dime. You know, sound too good to be true? No, it's not. It's temporary family health care dwellings. And not only that, this is an offspring of a study that was done, a grant that was provided by DHS. And two very entrepreneurial gentlemen are here today that came out of a personal story of their own. So we also have a testifier here. But I just want to point out a couple of features about temporary health care dwellings. The story that happened was they developed this, basically it's a glorified RV that is handicap accessible because it lowers down all the way to the ground, and it's also self-contained. What happens is sometimes family members have an elderly person who is either injured or temporarily might be even on hospice, and they want to come home, but the home may not be able to accommodate them. There's no room, it's not ADA compliant, and this provides an option for families to take care of loved ones at home. It does have the oversight that's necessary. It requires a doctor's permission, and it's temporary. It's for only 6 months, and there is an option to extend that, but the city would be involved with that process, and so there is some oversight. The challenge that we've run into, members, is that when you go through the regular city process, the time frame is too long. People's decisions need to be made in really a few days. And that's, I'm sure many of you have experienced this on your own when you've had older, you know, grandparents or your own parents, and there just simply isn't enough time. And cities are not used to having to deal with this type of innovative new idea. They want to put them into manufactured housing, or they want to put them into something else. And this is an opportunity to really streamline the process and make it simple and easy for family members who are going through a very difficult time as it is to have a streamlined process at an affordable cost. That's the greatest thing of all. If you want to rent one of these units, it is $1,250 a month. Comparison to a nursing home or some other skilled facility, you're looking at $3,000 to $5,000. And the problem is it's putting pressure on people's personal finances and eventually going back on the system. And that's something, folks, that we just can't afford with the silver tsunami coming up. So I do have a testifier here that can tell her personal story, Anita. And would you like, and so, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence.
Ms. Burke, welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself and give us your testimony.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anita Burke, and I reside in Apple Valley. My home sits on a little less than half an acre. I am the daughter of Doris Hunt, on whose behalf I come before you today. My mother is 80 years old, and her health has been failing for the last year. After being hospitalized and then put into rehab or nursing home care several times in the last 4 years, she decided in December 2015 to go on hospice care. She is currently living in an assisted living facility in Eagan, Minnesota. Her rent for a studio apartment is $3,170 a month, and her care services have run an additional $5,000 a month since December. Given that her pension and Social Security income comes to just under $2,900 a month, she is quickly running out of funds. She has only 2 or 3 months of reserves before her funds will be gone. Over the last couple of years, I have tried to find a more affordable housing for her, but had been unable to find an affordable alternative that would meet her current needs. However, this past summer, I saw a video for Next Door Housing and thought that at some point that might be worth looking into. Once my mother entered hospice care, I decided to give them a call to see if their services would be a viable option for my mom. I contacted them, and they called the city of Apple Valley to see if this would be an option for us. I knew that it would probably be a long shot to get approval, but thought it worth a try. Even though I knew that it might not work, I was still disappointed to hear that it would not be approved by the city. If I could move my mother into my home, I would. However, my home does not have a handicapped accessible bathroom, and I do not have a spare bedroom since my 8 children still live at home. I do not work outside the home and would be able to provide for my mother's needs. Her pension would more than cover the cost of renting a unit from Next Door Housing and still leave funds for me to hire aides to be with my mother when I am unavailable. I am able and willing to make the sacrifices necessary to care for her on a daily basis. My only problem is that I literally do not have room in my home, and my husband and I cannot afford to put on an addition. In retrospect, Next Door Housing would have been a wonderful option for when my mother, who resided in Florida at the time, had heart surgery here in Minnesota 9 years ago. After her surgery and rehab at a transitional care facility here in Minnesota, she rushed back to Florida where there was no family to help her because she wanted a little privacy and did not want to inconvenience my family. An option such as this would have afforded my mother the privacy and handicap bathroom she desired while still enabling her to get the help she needed after leaving rehab. There are many scenarios in which an option such as what this bill would allow would be helpful to families. As the baby boom generation continues to age, the cost of their care will rise. Families need to be able to have affordable options from which to choose. The thought of going on elderly waiver has weighed heavily on my mother's mind. It upsets her to think that, in her words, she will be on welfare after working hard for so many years to advance her education and build up a retirement fund. When she enrolls in the elderly waiver program, I estimate that it will cost taxpayers anywhere between $3,000 to $6,000 a month to pay for her housing and care, a cost that would be zero if she were able to move into my backyard with a unit similar to what Next Door Housing provides. Caring for elderly parents on a daily basis, even temporarily, is not something that everyone is able or willing to do. But for those of us who are, more options are necessary. I believe that families should be allowed to help out their ailing family members and should be applauded for being willing to do so instead of being deterred from doing so. As my mother gets closer and closer to having no more funds, I see her pride and her accomplishments diminish. I wish that I could be allowed to help her maintain her pride and dignity in these last months of her life so that she could die knowing that not only was she not living on the taxpayer's dime, but that she was also able to pass a little something along to her children. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berg, for your testimony this morning. Are there any questions for the testifier? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say thank you so much. I just think that's, thank you for bringing your story here to us. I think it, I already really am intrigued by this idea. And I think that you have really helped to give it a little more life for us. And I think that you've hit on something, and Representative Peterson's bill really hits on something really important. And, you know, I hope that this can work out for you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question so we can compare, you know, we're talking about comparing costs. Did you look into how much it would cost to have the care coming in that it would have needed?
Ms. Berg.
Yes, I did. It would cost anywhere between $20 to $25 an hour, but I would not need care. She would not need to have, I wouldn't need an aide most of the time since I am home most of the time. And if I'm not home, I have several family members that are at home.
Representative Yaruso.
Thank you. That's all. Thanks.
All right. Any other questions for the testifier? If not, Ms. Berg, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Representative Peterson, you have a couple other testifiers this morning.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Jesse Lammy. I work with Next Door Housing. Really, the goal here and what I want to talk about this bill is taking a step back at the bigger picture. Although this bill only allows for housing for 6 months, the decisions and the time, the peace and the ability to catch your breath and recover during those 6 months really change the lives for the future of these individuals far into the future. When we make hasty decisions and are forced to leave our communities and our families to find an open bed, it is stressful on not only someone who is in oftentimes a very tough time in life, but it's tough on their families and it separates individuals. This bill, it's important to know that very similar bills have been passed in other states, North Carolina, Virginia, New York. We've taken an ordinance passed by the city of Charlotte that made some restrictions on this bill and incorporated it into our version here. This bill is really just trying to provide these options. It's something that everyone will benefit from, and keeping families together and improving the lives of someone who has fought for our country or worked their whole lives to provide for us is a bigger concern and a bigger issue than a potentially not in my backyard opinion in view. It's important to know that as we see this pass in other states, it's very clear that the need is here in Minnesota, and that was evident as this idea received a grant through the Department of Human Services, Aging and Adult Services Division as part of a Live Well at Home grant. We think that the overwhelming need validates the means of this bill to help push forward change. Thank you.
Thank you. If you'd like to present, we'll have the two give their testimony together, because I think they'll be able to answer questions together too if they could. So please go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Lewisell, and I'd first of all just like to say thank you to everyone. What we're talking about here isn't something that should be feared. This should really be embraced, and it's embraced elsewhere. And really all we're trying to get across is that it's time for Minnesota to embrace the idea of helping those who have done everything for us. I'll keep it at that. I'm sure you guys have questions, too.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. I think this has got great potential and something that's needed. I do have a couple questions on the unit itself and how it will be connected to sewage, water, and that kind of thing. Is it going to be temporary? Is it going to be more permanent? And what will the hookups look like?
Mr. Lammy?
Thank you very much, Representative. As far as the hookups are concerned, we modeled this after how it has been in other states connecting to the primary residence, the homes, our homes, for example, and it's important to know that, you know, this bill isn't about us. It's about opening up an option for families to bring care and, you know, opening the door to caregiving. But to answer your question, in working with the League of Cities, they appreciated that the utility management was kind of left up to the cities to decide. So how that's regulated and managed can be controlled by the cities as well. Based on the bill in North Carolina, they run off the primary residence. So a standard 30 to 50 amp electric outlet, same thing you'd have if you had a hot tub, and a freshwater hose in from the water is handled. Our models have internal septic tanks that could be pumped monthly, get on the schedule of a honey wagon, and it's very convenient and not disturbing for the neighborhood. Thank you.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer. I do like the idea, and I think it's something that, you know, could work. There are problems with what I'm hearing is the hookups, and my city is, along with the Representative Anderson, is not in favor of this at the moment, Bloomington, for a few reasons. Number one, the hookups in some houses are very close together. What effects will it have on the neighborhood and that kind of thing? You know, I personally think I would want to have my loved one as near as I can. So I'm not trying to say it's a bad idea. I'm just trying to bring up things that you may run into as it moves forward. Another issue is, and Representative Peterson, maybe you can answer this, is how the renewal process works, because it's not very clear in the bill. After the first 6 months, you and the municipality negotiate, but there's no clear language in the bill as to how that gets resolved.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rosenthal. First of all, we could actually change this bill so that because I looked at sewer as being a concern, and their units are all self-contained. And the only reason why sewer's in there was to accommodate the League of Minnesota Cities so that they had some purview over that. But technically speaking, these are temporary. They're not going to be, it would be too costly to set up to connect to city sewer and water, okay? I mean, a hose is one thing, but having it connect to sewer, I think, is much more expensive. And so it would kind of, in my opinion, defeat the purpose, but that was to accommodate their issues. But that's what I'm hearing as well is the issue. And considering that these units actually are not connected to sewer and it's part of getting them pumped out is part of the service that's provided with the cost of renting it. So we can certainly look at that and adjust that. And as far as how the process works is you go in and get your permit, pay $100, and that's for good for 6 months. Then during that six-month period of time, you'll have the amount of time available to go and talk to the city, go through the regular process, and it could be go as long as, I guess we left it open. At first it was a year, but, and I'll let, you know, maybe Jesse speak more to that.
Yeah, thank you. The goal here with the permit is to provide 6 months. Mom's cleared from the hospital in 2 days. We need somewhere for her to be. At the end of those 6 months, if the medical need is still there, we left the power to the cities to decide how it was managed. So a family could propose a date to the city, whether it's, you know, or we think mom has 3 or 4 months to live, or the wait list at our local facility is 2 or 3 more months. If it's being used appropriately, the city has the right to allow that to happen. If they're not receiving complaints, et cetera. Otherwise, they could deny, and they would have 60 days to vacate and have the home removed. Thank you.
So it could go into...
Representative Rosenthal. All right, thank you. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Which states, could you repeat which states this is in already?
North Carolina, Virginia, and New York.
Representative Yaruso.
I'm sorry. Okay. And the bill is similar. We have made some changes, some common sense things that we saw, such as requiring the dwelling to be handicap accessible. If it's going to be for someone recovering, we should, you know, make that mandatory. Thank you.
Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How do you winterize the water connection in a state that isn't North Carolina?
Or New York.
Yes, so it's very simple. Thank you. Yes, so it's very simple. There are insulated hoses that can keep your water source warm through negative 30, 40, 50 degrees Fahrenheit. In those times of extreme weather conditions, we will have contingency plans in place where if they are right next to the family and they need to stay somewhere for a few hours if that water line is frozen, luckily their family members will be right next door.
Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on line 2.23 to 2.25, it describes the family members that would be included in this. And I was just curious, I see that no mention of grandchildren, and I wonder if that's just an omission. It's certainly possible that somebody could have a grandchild that was of an age where they could provide the care needed.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Representative Yaruso. That's an excellent observation, and I think it should be added.
Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, could we make a motion to amend it now and get it taken care of for her, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
It's one-word addition.
You're able to make a motion.
So I would move that on line 2.23, after child, comma, we insert grandchild, comma.
Okay. All right, and I'm going to have Deb Dyson from House Research come up just to confirm the language. Yep, talking about you.
Mr. Chair, Deb Dyson from House Research. There are two places that you would want to insert your language. You have the 2.23 in the county zoning statute, and you said after child?
It seemed the logical place.
No, it was finding the page number. So you would insert it there, but you would also want to then insert it on page 4, line 30, after child. So it would be identical in both places, but you need it in both sections.
Thank you.
Okay, and
so I would move that we amend to insert on line 2.23 after child, comma, grandchild, comma, and on line 4.30 after child, comma, insert grandchild, comma.
Okay, thank you, Representative Yarusso. Are there any questions to the oral amendment? Representative Peterson, anything?
It's awesome.
All right, see no further discussion on this. All those in favor of the oral amendment to insert the word grandchild on lines 2.23 after the word child and on line 4.30 after the word child, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Representative Yarusso.
Thank you. And then it seems like it would be useful to clarify as completely as possible what those appeal procedures might look like, you know, to extend it and whatnot, because I can foresee that you would really put a city council in a bind if somebody has a disabled relative on site and wants to extend it, but there's been issues in the neighborhood, or for whatever reason the city does not want to extend it, and they're now put in the position of evicting grandma from the person's property. And so that would raise a lot of conflict in a lot of communities. And so anything that could clarify really what those expectations are, work with the League of Cities and get that nailed down first, I think would be good. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Anything to that, Representative Peterson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Yarusso. The cities are here, and we have been working with the League of Minnesota Cities. In fact, they're probably getting sick of us, but they're here, and so you know, I'd like them to comment on that as well. So maybe we could.
Okay, we'll have their testimony. I have a couple more people on the list, and then we'll be taking their testimony as well.
Okay.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson. I'm a big fan of that the Mini House show, so you know, we all been seeing that, so I'm quite intrigued by the houses and the magic of those, and so we can, you know, I've had an opportunity to meet these guys, and seems like a great concept. I have some of the concerns have been mentioned here working with the cities. I was on a city council, and clearly those you're going to have to work with that, and I know that doesn't totally fit into this committee, and so those stops will make a lot of sense, and you can clarify a lot of the questions, especially, you know, some of the members have brought up some of those. A couple of years ago, I happened to I played hockey with the former Governor Pawlenty, and we were over in Eagan, and he used to have one of those security boxes, or one of these, I call it like a warming house, out in his driveway. It was where the highway patrol would sit in there. So you'd drive down a whole neighborhood in Eagan, and there would be this one house with a warming house out in the driveway. And so that's kind of what I see, you know, the negative in a way, unfortunately, but I mean, so there would be the one house, and so there would be some concerns. There's a lot of cities, some of them that I represent, they don't even allow like a motor home or anything in their driveways, and you know, ice fishing, you know, those new big ice fishing houses, which are similar to your product, they don't really allow those in the driveway either. I just had a couple quick questions on the caregiver thing, and I just was wondering what that is exactly. Is that, would that be someone just, could someone conceivably start a business? I mean, could someone be a caregiver? I mean, could that be your job? I guess that's what I was trying to work out in my mind. I mean, I don't know how vague you're intending that to be. It just seems like it was a little broader. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like something you could offer your driveway to be a caregiver for someone. I mean, I think a lot of people buy into the concept of a family member pretty easily. You know, I think that's an easy sell, you know, or easier sell. But if it's a, so if you can explain the caregiver question to me, and then I don't understand the motor vehicle tax issue. I don't know what you're exactly trying to accomplish there. Just so if you can clarify those two points to me, there, appreciate that.
But Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so the first question was caregiver. And you have to be a relative. So unless a relative wants to go into the business of caring for their relative, I mean, which I don't think is the case. And, I mean, you can't really be in a business of one. And that's all I can live in these things. So, but there are businesses that do caregiving, you know, visiting angels, things like that. In fact, my father is 95, and so I've been experiencing a lot of this personally, and he is at home. And it wasn't until he actually got home that he really started to get so much better. But I was, I guess, pleasantly surprised at the amount of services that come from the county. I mean, there was people coming there every day from the county or the, you know, the nurses, and I was just, you know, pleasantly surprised how much support was coming into these homes. So that's not typical where they may be there by themselves, never having anybody else coming to visit them. But then from there, certainly those other additional support services are available outside of that. But, you know, the ultimate responsibility does land on the relative, the caregiver themselves. And then we can speak to
Mr. Chair, maybe to that point, Representative Peterson. It just in here it mentions a healthcare agent, Benton. Also, so I'm not exactly sure what that is, but maybe Representative Liebling or somebody. You know, I don't know what a healthcare agent is. Do you know, Representative Peterson?
Representative Peterson,
is that a relative?
Where are you talking about? Where in the bill?
Line
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, line point 2.19, healthcare agent. It seems like a different definition because it says relative, legal guardian, and then a wholly different person, healthcare agent. So I just didn't know what a healthcare.
Yeah.
Right.
Go ahead.
Representative Peterson.
Well, actually, I'll have Mr. LaSalle answer that.
John LaSalle. This bill was closely derived off of North Carolina's bill. This might be language that was from North Carolina's bill that made it through the revisor's office and somehow wasn't clarified. The intention of this bill is to have a family member care. This is the
definition.
This is a definition section, and this is, you know, my first time doing this, but we're under the impression you needed to kind of define the language that's going to be used. Caregiver means many things. And I think it gives a broad definition of caregiver. A healthcare agent, again, might not be in a definition in Minnesota statute, and that can probably be adjusted as well.
Representative Bully?
Mr. Chair, I'm glad to hear that. I'm not sure what it means because it seems like something different than relative to me. But and I think most of us would buy into the concept of a relative and that need and helping someone, you know, in the family as we could. It just kind of felt to me like it starts turning into like someone says, "Oh, I got a driveway. You can throw one of these mini homes in it, and you know, little side business." But anyways, but that just it just kind of seemed like a transition. But can you also please address the motor home or the motor vehicle tax issue? And just I know this isn't tax committee. I'm just curious what it.
And briefly,
thank Mr. Lamy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. I'll answer quickly. Our model and the goal of this bill is to help people quickly who are desperately in need in a time of transition. So our models are built out as RVs. We can roll in and roll out. It's, you know, installed in an hour and removed in an hour with little impact. So the taxes would be the same as if you were renting a recreational vehicle. It does not affect property values. I will add that when they're on the property, they're to be adherent to all regulations as would real property. So square footage requirements, setback, you couldn't have a shed in your driveway. So it would require it to be in a backyard that has enough green space, water runoff, and setback from the neighbors to be placed there. Thank you.
Representative Lilly?
I think that's good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Newton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Peterson. I think this is a good bill, and I have signed on as co-author. I would like to hear from the League of Cities, though, on two specific things, the zoning and the fees that you've got, that normally these are left up to the cities as to how they're going to do the zoning, and they normally establish fees for any sort of structure that they have. So if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, I'd like to have the League of Cities address those issues.
And Representative Newton, they are on the list of testifiers, so we'll be getting to them.
Thank you.
In due time. Thank you. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have missed this, but I'm reading through the bill, and I'm not seeing where Grandpa from Florida can't come up and park in the backyard for 3 months if he meets the criteria, if he's got a couple of disabilities, has a handicap sticker on his RV. What prevents that? And start with that first.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Considine. First of all, it has to have a doctor's order. So if Grandpa came from Florida, he'd need to go visit the doctor and provide a certificate of need. And then after that, the permit's for 6 months. And then after that, they need to go back to the city for any further permit to stay there. Now, let's be honest. Somebody from Florida can drive up here and park in somebody's backyard, and if the city doesn't stop them from doing it, they can do it right now. So this is what is defining what is acceptable and streamlining the process. So, and I want to just address Representative Newton's comments about fees. The reason why the fees are in here, they're similar to those other states, because we want to keep this still affordable. We're trying to make this as least intensive for the cities. They've got enough issues to deal with. We just want to make sure that they know that it's happening so that they have information. But when Ms. Burke tried getting her temporary dwelling in her home, they wanted $600. They didn't even really know how to address it and what codes it should be under. And all they could come up with is a bunch of, this isn't going to work. Instead of saying, this is how we could make it work, it was like, this is how it will not work, and we're going to charge you fee after fee after fee, and then even then, we can't guarantee that we'll approve it. So this is really lifting a barrier so that people can use their own property the way that they would like to and not have exorbitant fees that come with it.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. From what I gathered from your testimony just then, if they have a doctor that's sympathetic, that would be the only thing stopping them from visiting for 3 or 4 months in the summer and parking in the backyard. And you're right, there's a guy in my neighborhood that his parents come and they park on the street and nobody complains. But if you're going to start doing this a lot, I can see people taking advantage of it, and I think there needs to be a way to make sure that part doesn't happen, that somebody that's got some minor difficulties still driving around in an RV isn't coming and visiting for an extended period of time. My other question is, has there been any study done as far as the impact on the property values around the people?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Considine. This is a temporary thing. That's like having a study saying that, you know, I have a trailer in my yard when I go snowmobiling, which I actually do, and it's personal property. It's not part of the property itself. It's not attached to it. So it wouldn't be, you know. And I should point out, right in front of the Capitol, there is one of these temporary dwellings, so you can look at it and check it out yourself. I really do think you should look at it. It's pretty exciting to see. And personally, I think it's much more attractive than other dwellings like sheds or other things that people have put in their yards. I mean, I think it's a good-looking thing. But it's not attached to the property, so it can't affect property values.
Where is that display again, Representative Peterson?
It's right on Martin. Is it on?
It's in front of the Department of Transportation's building at the meters. But to address your original concern, Representative, in order to be defined as a temporary health care dwelling, it needs to have, among other things, handicap accessible, basically a handicap accessible floor plan. There's not many handicap accessible RVs, although you can get a sticker. I mean, it needs to have exterior materials that are compatible in composition, appearance, and durability to the exterior materials used in standard residential construction. That no Winnebago is going to meet that requirement. We believe that that's hopefully going to deter individuals from trying to get a permit in that route, and we're always open to suggestions as far as addressing that even further.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to see something like that, and Representative Peterson, if you have three or four of these in your neighborhood, I think it's going to start affecting property values. I mean, that's a worst case scenario, but I think it's worth looking into anyway. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Constein. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I wanted to make a suggestion when we talked about health care agent, and I don't know that this is where this intent is going, but when you have a parent, somebody ill in your home, you have health care agents that do come in once in a while, mm-hmm. do some kind of care, specific care that you would have. So I don't know if that would be addressing that. The parent or the family would be taking care of that parent, but you would still have, I did it with my father-in-law in hospice. We did most of the work, but then there was somebody that come in and do specific things. So that would be what I would direct that toward. I don't, and then my other question was, is it possible to procure a small house, get permit for a family member to live, say, 3 months in an area the family member is living longer or needing that type of housing for a while? There's nothing stopping them from moving from child to child, let's say. Mm. You could move that other than renting their place or purchasing one. That would be, I don't know if it would really matter, as long as you're keeping it down to the city is able to control where that's going.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher. I guess one thing I think we should keep in mind is this isn't the solution for everybody. I mean, think of how many people that you know that have an elderly parent that is available to take care of their parent or whomever, and then want to do it this way, and they are in the right health frame that they could actually take part in something like this. You know, it's not millions of people in Minnesota. It's going to be a few, and it's going to be short term. The average stay is 44 days. I mean, chances are the neighbors won't even notice it's there before it's gone. But, you know, I'm not sure if I really understand your question so much. So, okay. Well, anyway, that's the point of why we're here, is because this is addressing a population that it works perfectly for. It doesn't work for everybody. But at least they should have an option instead of draining their savings accounts and giving some people some dignity and actually providing some care and then really looking at what are we going to do with the silver tsunami people? We just don't even have the facilities. We don't have the resources to take care of all these people, and this is one solution.
Representative Keel?
Just, okay. It was not really a question, just kind of a curiosity thing, and this would be a lot better than my living in the grain bin, so, in my backyard.
Better than living in the grain bin. Thank you, Representative Keel. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment on caregiver. I think it's really important to allow flexibility there, because I can see if it's a sibling, the siblings may be close, you can do oversight, but you may not be able to do some of the physical jobs that need to be done. So that's my thought, is just allow flexibility there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Representative Liebling.
Thank you. So I wanted to comment on the healthcare agent thing, and I think that what that probably is referring to is, you know, like we have a power of attorney for healthcare. That's what I think that's referring to. And actually, I think it would be good for staff to comment on that because I'm, you know, I'm just kind of pulling that out of the air a little bit. But it seems like by the context, that would be what it is. And then I have another comment after that.
Ms. Pinelli.
Mr. Chair and members, I wasn't clear in looking at the language if that's what that meant either, but that was my first impression, is that it would mean something like a healthcare power of attorney.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I mean, that makes sense to me, and it seems appropriate, but maybe we need to, or maybe you need to work with staff to figure out what the Minnesota appropriate term is, if that... If Ms. Pugnelli doesn't exactly know, that tells us that it's probably not the right term for what we need. So, you know, I would say we need to make sure. But I think it's appropriate to have it there because, and, you know, that may be, you know, sometimes somebody might, you know, for goodness sakes, we have a lot of people who live with someone they're not married to. They may live together for many years, and that person is your healthcare agent, and that person might provide that for you. So I think that needs to be in there.
Okay.
And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is, you know, since, and again, I think this is a very compelling idea. I really do. And I think, Representative Peterson, you're making a really good case for it. But we're talking here about people who, in some cases, you know, well, they probably are vulnerable adults, right? And I wonder if we ought to have some provision to make sure that they get information, or that the caregiver gets information about all the services that are available, so that by the fact that they go into this private setting, and maybe this is a problem with another private setting, I guess if you have a room in your home and you take them into your home, it's the same deal.
Right.
But, and maybe we already do this, but to make sure that they get information about what's available to them in the community, you know, respite care, you know, the county agency, the kinds of things you were talking about, the wonderful services that your parent had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just so we make sure that when people use this option that they don't get disconnected from everything that's there. Have you given any thought to that?
Representative Leland, are you referring more to like a senior linkage line type thing with that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I that might be one thing that we might want to make sure they know about, just so that if they qualify to have a respite care, or, you know, just by virtue of the fact that they're choosing the setting doesn't mean that they wouldn't necessarily need to know about other things, or that the county wouldn't need to know that they're there, just so that, you know, because we all are sort of sitting here thinking about ourselves and our loved ones, but that doesn't mean that everybody who would do this would necessarily be on the up and up with regard to that person who would be, could be kind of isolated in that setting.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Liebling. I mean, I think you bring up a good point. I'm not sure if putting it in this legislation is the place to do that. I do think our counties and our healthcare system in general is awesome at helping people navigate all the different options that are available to them. I mean, especially going through it and not knowing anything, and they were like, well, you should be doing X, Y, and Z, and, you know, you have this, this, and this, and you have these certain options available to you. I really do think that's happening right now, so that we don't have to worry about putting that in legislation here, because it probably is addressed someplace else. But, I mean, I think in practice it certainly is wise.
And Representative Peterson, would the doctors know when they have to get that? Would that also avail themselves to some of the services that are there?
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Leibman.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Representative Peterson. I wonder if Ms. Pugnelli or Mr. Williams could comment on that, whether, because I think it is the same as if somebody just goes home to the home, you know, the room in somebody's house.
Mm-hmm.
Is there some, you know, at the point where they're released from the hospital, say, are they necessarily given a packet of information? Is somebody making sure that, you know, how does that happen?
Ms. Pinelli.
Mr. Chair, members, I think
in certain circumstances when people are discharged from a hospital, they do receive some sort of information about other services that are available once they leave the hospital. I'm not sure exactly under what circumstances that happens. I'd have to look.
Okay.
Representative Liebling. To this point, Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Based on my experience with my own parents, and I believe this is motivated by Medicare guidelines, that when someone is discharged, when a vulnerable adult, an elderly person or otherwise vulnerable adult is discharged from a hospital setting, the hospital social worker meets with the family to ensure that the person is going into a setting where they're going to receive the care that they need. However, if you have not had that hospital visit, there isn't a similar mechanism that would, you know, there's not an intervention step at which that happens. And so there could be cases where someone's just had a downward slide but hasn't had that hospital occurrence where it wouldn't happen. But anybody who has been in the hospital is supposed to be receiving that kind of counseling before they're discharged.
All right. Thank you, Representative Yarusso. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And they're not always happy about it either, as I can attest to. I just dealt with my parents last year, and now I've got my father-in-law. I just wanted to say, Representative Pugh, it's not that I oppose this idea. In fact, I kind of like it, but I think there are some tweaks to make sure that it does what we want it to do. That might be needed. And that's just a comment. Thank you.
All right, thanks. And for members on a couple of the points that we brought up, the bill will have to go to Health and Human Service Reform as well as we look at this. So a few of us will get another crack at this in a couple of days. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment to follow up on Representative Liebling's comment. I was in the grocery store last month, and I had a long, detailed conversation with somebody who said we really need to be looking at our guardianship laws, and I think that's mainly what she's talking about when you're talking about the vulnerable adults. So that might be something we put on the docket someday as well. Thank you
Representative Mason. Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Peterson. Thank you to two young entrepreneurs who are doing a good job. You mentioned that these dwellings differ from mobile homes. How do they differ, except for the exterior appearance?
Mr. Lamy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. So we, and I can't speak to, you know, how what the bill completely allows. We based it on the bills that were written in the other states and what we saw as a common sense approach to it. So our models and for our process, for example, we work with a manufactured housing provider and ask them to take that down in size and scale to be street legal, to be to an RV type code. In general, what I've seen from the definitions as looking at travel trailer, recreational vehicle, motor home, things get fuzzy, and even licensing them, we go back and forth. Is it an RV or a recreational trailer? I mean, at the DOT, so there's definitely fine lines there. And I think that with the bill requiring that it's built to the ANSI codes that are federally, you know, nationally issued for the safety of occupying a recreational vehicle, as well as adding on the exterior materials of a residential home, as well as insulation values, etc., we meet a very appropriate level for the use of the model. Thank you.
Representative Rosenthal.
Mr. Chair, thank you. You know, I'd kind of like to have one in my backyard so I could escape. but besides
have
that,
to get sick first.
You know, I really do like the idea, but I do think there are some things that need to be clarified and worked out, and especially, you know, I totally get it if someone's coming out of the hospital and you need a place quick, but if it's a vulnerable adult that may be there for years, at what time does that go from being a motor vehicle to a piece of real property?
Mr. Lamy?
Mr. Chair, thank you. And we, the goal, and we understand that there's always this, you know, question of how of enforcement, how if someone doesn't follow the law, you know, with is in line with all of our good intentions, how is that to be looked at? And the definition of a, of, I mean, this bill is a temporary family health care dwelling, a temporary dwelling, and travel trailers defined by Minnesota statutes are a dwelling designed for temporary occupancy. And I understand as, you know, time passes, when does that turn into real property if it's being occupied? I will, you know, add the comment that plenty of cities allow RV storage, you know, forever, year-round. If someone's living in it, I understand the removal could be harder to enforce, but it's a question that, you know, we're trying to balance. Thank you.
Anything else, Representative Rosenthal? Okay, Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mostly just want to make a point when you talked about there's a model sitting out by the Department of Transportation. Will somebody be there to help us with some information?
We'll be out there. We have to run and feed the meter, so.
Okay. And I also want to make the point that these do differ from tiny homes. The St. Cloud Technical and Community College has just auctioned off a tiny home that you can take up to your Deer Woods because that is on a trailer as well and licensed as a vehicle. But I think these differ a lot in that you have them ADA compliant. Mm-hmm. And so there's a different component to that where this lowers down. A lot of these tiny homes don't. And so when we look at the differentiation and what some of the cities allow for ordinances and they don't, these are a little bit more, they look a little bit more permanent, they look a little bit more, you know, like they've been there for a while because they do sit on the ground. So I think that's one of the things that I think the cities can look at as saying it looks not so, you know, we're going to drive it out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I think you do a good job, but I probably will be out there later and asking you a lot of questions on that.
Great.
Thank you.
There's definitely a field trip that's going to be planned out this morning yet. Any final questions for the testifiers we have in front of us? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Louisville and Mr. Lamy, for your testimony this morning. We do have three others that are on the list to testify. Mr. Johnson, if you could please come forward. And it looks like you're all together here, so Mr. Lauder, Mr. Gunlock, if you could please come down and introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities, and appreciate the thought and the approach that the committee is giving to this issue today. Do you want the other testifiers to introduce themselves now or wait till they speak?
When they're ready to speak. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll start off then, Mr. Chair. The League of Minnesota Cities does represent all the cities of the state, and we have been working very diligently, extensively maybe even, with the author and the proponents on this, because it does address an issue that, as we, I think, all can associate with, is a dread we have either in our recent past, our current situation, or our near future, is how to deal with the needs of aging and injured relatives. So we know that this is an important issue. Our cities struggle with this every day. Cities and other local units of government are specifically tasked in Minnesota law with dealing with the issues of public health, safety, and welfare for our residents. And in doing that, our task is to balance the needs, interests, and rights of the various property owners that exist within that jurisdiction. So it gets to be a very difficult thing, as you see something that would obviously be very beneficial for one person and have to decide how does that affect other people and how can we still assure public health, safety, and welfare is being met. So that's our struggle in working on this, and we do despite, I think, some tremendous efforts that the author has made, the Delete All Amendment does make a significant number of changes to address some of our concerns. We still do have a number that remain. Mr. Chair, many of those kind of get into the weeds of the permitting and the local land use planning and zoning that I know you don't want to spend time on here. We're going to try and just touch on those so that the committee is aware that they exist, because some of the questions have hit on them. But we'll save our work on those for another committee that really likes spending time on those issues. But Mr. Chair, so the big issue here, obviously, and it was mentioned by at least one of the questions, is this is a question of zoning and land use planning. Right now, that is the task of local government. By statute, we are supposed to be doing that. This removes this instance from local control, and it actually says must issue the permit. that's the requirement in here. It leaves a lot of cases open where we might prefer to not, or we might think that this is not the right situation to do it in, but we do not have that discretion. And that's limited both by the statute and by local authority to do certain things. So I just want to lay that as the precursor. Despite that, we are continuing to work with the author and will continue to work with the author on this legislation. Our concerns kind of fall into several different categories. One is the public health and safety area. A first primary question is, well, why is this person not in the house? Why are we putting them next to the house in a temporary dwelling? And we think that's an important question that needs to be looked at. We've raised that just recently with the proponents, so it's not their fault it's not in here now. But we think that is an important question is, this is not necessarily the most supportive setting a person could be put in. If they're in the house with the relative and there's space and safety in doing that, that's much preferable to being in a RV somewhere in the backyard with a muddy path shoveled to get to it. So we really do want to see a little better attention to, is this the right setting for the person to recuperate in? And our city authority, we do not have that expertise. We only have a couple cities in the state that have their own health department. The rest, it's all done by the counties and the state. So we aren't in a position to make that decision for a permit applicant. So someone else needs to be looking at that and making that decision. We also have a number of issues that we need to continue working on related to utilities. For instance, an insulated water hose. Obviously, you can have an electric coil around it that keeps the water from freezing in that hose. But the spigot coming up on the side of the house, we all know every fall you're supposed to be draining those spigots to get the water out because they'll freeze. And something has to keep that pipe going down into your water main in your house from freezing as well. There is going to be some significant work that's needed on a number of these. Getting the right electrical connection could be a big issue. And we also need to have these things put in a place where there is access for the septic truck, which are big, heavy vehicles, to be able to properly service the holding tanks on these facilities so that we don't end up with overflowing or contaminated issues from a not properly treated septic tank on a facility. We have a number of other concerns that come up around the differences between this and a normal manufactured home where it must be on a platform, it must be anchored, must meet state building code. Those are not requirements of this, and in fact they can't be on a permanent platform and they cannot be anchored. Well, these are not big units. They're under 300 square feet. You have a large flat line wind event come through your community, you know what happens to all the campers that are parked in yards and all the other small structures, the tool sheds and everything else, that they are at risk of being moved pretty substantially by a significant weather event. That is definitely something we are concerned about with the placement of these, both in terms of the safety of the resident of that structure and that structure being able to move and damage other structures or other properties. We also have concerns about fire and emergency access. How will our emergency folks know where the residents are? These are temporary permits. This is not something that's on the property description of every property. There would have to be some mechanism where local emergency responders know the number of residents, where they are, who they are, so that when they respond to an emergency at a situation, they know where the people are that could be affected. And we also have a lot of concerns that this does not address lot size. There are going to be a lot of places where this is really not appropriate given the layout of the facilities, of the lots. My backyard, I have a almost half-acre lot. My neighbor has a slightly larger one, but in their lot, the placement of one of these would have to be in the space between their house and my backyard. My backyard happens to have a swimming pool in it. If an elderly person recovering from surgery was living in the trailer that would have to go in that space, starting at about 7 o'clock at night, I'm going to guess my grandkids would not be welcome in there screaming and jumping around in the swimming pool and doing the things that you normally do after supper, because there's a person trying to get better and convalesce in a small trailer very nearby. And that's a change in land use that didn't exist prior to this. We've never had that conflict on this property before. So I think we're at the local level, that's where we start getting problems, because now we have people calling, complaining about each other, and getting into a very tense situation, and we, under this statute, don't have much we can do about that, because we must give the permit, and we cannot put the conditions on it that a that an IUP or a conditional use permit would normally allow. So to get to the crux of that piece of this, Mr. Chair, cities can do this right now. We have cities looking at how they can allow this kind of work to be done under the land use planning and zoning that they already have decided is appropriate for their community and that those elected officials and staff have worked to develop. I've got testifiers here from one city to kind of talk about that angle a little bit more. I do want to address a couple of the questions that were directed, Mr. Chair, before I turn it over to my city experts. First of all, with Representative Newton's questions, Mr. Chair, related to zoning and fees, so I think I've covered the zoning question. We really do feel that land use planning and zoning is best done by the local elected unit of government. That's what they're there for. They really know what the planning and zoning of their community is best matched to. And on the fees, the bill does have an allowance in it that says a different fee schedule can be set. That was already that was addressed by the proponents and the author. So it says the fee is $100 unless a different fee schedule is set by the local government. So if this was something that was costing a city a lot to implement, they could have a fee that appropriately matches the cost of staffing the program. To another question that was asked about the definitions of caregiver, relative, other things there, our main concern with that definition, because we don't do the health care part of this, is the permit part. And under the two sections where counties and municipalities must provide a permit, it allows either the caregiver or a relative to apply for the permit. That really doesn't function well because it needs to be the property owner that's applying for the permit. Otherwise, we have no connection to, from the property owner to the application for the use on the property. That I think we can work on in the next committee. And then finally, with questions about potential loophole use or attempts to get around or use this in an advantageous manner other than the very good intentions that the author and the proponents have, that is one of our ongoing concerns in many different ways, is people who are planning an excellent business plan with excellent service to take care of people who really need help, that's wonderful. But people who are trying to use this as a way to have a cheaper way to deal with someone that they don't want to deal with, or who want to have a way that they can just live somewhere, you know, inexpensively for a season or two, this says must. If they have a doctor's note and apply for a permit, we must grant the permit. And it does not say that they can't come back every summer and ask for it again. They can get this six-month permit, leave, come back, get it again, leave. And then finally, the enforcement of this is virtually, well, we'll say it's extremely difficult. I won't say impossible, but cities, as many of you may know, have very limited ability to enter private property. We cannot do it without express permission of the property owner, even to inspect water meters, things like that. So we would definitely not have the ability to send someone in to see what's the state of the person, who's living in that trailer, how many people are living in that trailer, is anyone still living in that trailer. That's not something that we can easily get access to or have staffing to do. So we're going to continue to work very hard with the author on this because we think it is a very important issue, as many of you have noted. We just want to make sure that the unintended consequences don't make it something that becomes a very unwelcome way of helping people instead of a very useful way of helping people. So, Mr. Chair, with that, thank you, and I'll be happy to stay for questions and hang around afterwards for more questions that people have.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. We'll take the testimony from Mr. Lauder and Ms. Gunlich next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dean Lauder. I'm the city manager for the city of New Brighton, and this is an interesting topic for us to be here talking about since our the business owners, the proponents of the proposed legislation, are actually officed in New Brighton. And so I've had a chance to meet with them and talk with them at their office. I've actually gone through the unit that you apparently have an opportunity to tour as well and see firsthand. So I've gone that far as to take a look and to meet with them and to hear about the need that they're trying to address. And in my discussion with them, and what I would share with you or reflect on, and I understand that there are certain topics or areas that we don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but as Mr. Johnson stated, at least we'd like to have them on the record so that they're noted issues that do need to be addressed. I don't believe it's our position necessarily to say that the bill shouldn't move forward, but it needs a lot of work. And among the concerns that Mr. Johnson raised, I think that there could be a whole variety of issues. I'm glad to hear that the utility connections, things of that nature, are being discussed. Another concern or issue that I raise to the business owners is in a municipal distribution system, a water system, if there is a water main break or some kind of compromise to the system, a drop in pressure of 20 PSI or more can actually cause what's called a backflow contamination problem. And what that means is anything attached to a garden hose or a house can actually be pulled right through that residential unit and can contaminate the main system. And so I asked about backflow prevention and things of that nature. That's something that could potentially be addressed, but there are also issues that could result as a problem of that. There are just so many questions that still remain unanswered. Among those concerns, and I feel it imperative to raise them again, is that the impact to zoning, we realize that this isn't, in the words of the author, a solution for everybody, but yet what's proposed is carte blanche zoning approval across all communities for this use. And it is recognized that there's a need out there. We're talking about a set of circumstances that we'll all face, either as potential caregivers or receivers ourselves. And so we do acknowledge that. We just feel that there's a lot more work that needs to be done to address those issues. With regards to fees, generally, as I'm sure all of you are aware, when a community establishes a fee for a process, there needs to be a nexus that's tied to the actual related costs of delivering that service. And there needs to be actual work done to verify how that fee's been established. Here it's being mandated with no thought process given to what the real impacts or costs are to a community, and I don't know that we know all of those yet. So in the event that you have one of these units in somebody's backyard, and maybe a neighbor doesn't get along with a neighbor now, or maybe they have a legitimate concern about the quality of care that's being delivered to that loved one that's living in that trailer unit. Maybe they feel like they haven't been checked on for days or weeks or whatever the case might be. Who are they going to call? Most likely the local police or the local fire marshal or a building official. And they're going to, city staff will then be confronted with addressing a whole host of issues that we're not really equipped to at a local level. And I believe that there are costs there. So while we're talking about saving costs and addressing an issue, I think what we may be also talking about is potentially passing on costs that are more difficult to track. And I think more time needs to be given to try to identify what those are, not in an effort to stop the bill, but I think in an effort to understand its full impact. And so I just encourage folks to take a look at that. Another thing that may be for another committee to discuss might be a provision of an opt-in or an opt-out, where cities could opt in or opt out, and then that allows then for local control to be there, or IUPs, things of that nature. I understand that those processes can sometimes feel burdensome or cumbersome, but really most metropolitan communities have figured out a way to make those as easy on an applicant as they possibly can. A lot of private businesses go through different rules and regulations that are unique to different residential suburbs. Our zoning codes, rules, and regulations in New Brighton are by some developers perceived as less restrictive and easier to navigate than other communities, by others more difficult. But they are navigable, is the point. And each community is allowed to maintain control, local control over their community, which also goes right to the heart of allowing each community to engage in its own self-determination and express its own values for how it sees its community developing and growing. With that, I'll reserve any more comments. I'll wait for questions and introduce Assistant Director Janice Dunlop.
All right, welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Janice Gunlock. I am the planning director for the City of New Brighton. I've been working in that field for about 14 years, and I've worked in four different communities. And what I can tell you is that every community is very unique, and they have different challenges and expectations of how to maintain neighborhood harmony. And that's why we feel maintaining local control is very important because there is a lot of differences as you move throughout the metro area. As Mr. Lauder and Mr. Johnson stated, there are local processes that applicants can utilize to do this on their properties. And in New Brighton, we pride ourselves with how efficiently we can move applicants through that process. I know you didn't want to get into the zoning concerns too much, but I do want to brush across a few topics because they did come up today. First and foremost is the aesthetic concerns of these actual units and who defines whether or not they're ADA compliant. As Mr. Johnson said, the way the bill's written is we must issue a permit. I have no doubt the authors of this bill's units are very nice and probably aesthetically are very pleasing and handicap accessible. But in my experience, those provisions will create lots of different aesthetically pleasing or unpleasing units, and it puts staff in a very difficult position to try and determine what's appropriate. And in this particular instance, with the way the bill is written, I don't think we have much discretion on the aesthetics of these units. Going off of the aesthetics is the building and fire safety concerns. My function is as a planning director. I work with the building officials and the fire marshals of our local communities, and there is concern about the safety of these occupants. Mr. Johnson referenced if a storm comes by, what happens to this unit or any of the other structures nearby. And building and fire really look at these issues, and for them to not be able to review these units is a little alarming to us, so we'd like to work on that further. And then the other issue is setback concerns. I know as written, the bill states that they have to comply with local setback ordinances, but every community regulates setbacks differently. There are setback provisions for principal buildings. There are setback provisions for accessory buildings. And those setback provisions are based on are people living in these units or not living in these units. And as presented, these are really functioning as accessory buildings with occupants, and so there needs to be some additional work on how that piece is managed. And then just lastly, there are some surrounding use conflicts. The pool incident described earlier is a very good example. Cities are often put in the middle of neighbor disputes, and settling those neighbor disputes sometimes is impossible. And so to the extent that we can limit that surrounding use conflict is really important. And then the nuisance and unintended consequences of these facilities is something that, you know, we can never anticipate everything that's going to come up. And so, again, that's why it's so important that we maintain local control through the IUP or the special use permit process, where we can define conditions that are very specific to the unique property and neighborhood of where these are being placed. That's all I have, but I can address any questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Gunlock, and thank you for your testimony today. We do have a couple of people on the list with questions. I would ask members, given the time and that we do have another bill coming forward, a lot of what they had addressed will be actually addressed in the next committee. So if you could please keep your questions to Aging and Long-Term Care, Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And these are basically probably just comments that I hope that you keep in mind as we go on the process. I know a lot of the times you look at what may, might, could happen, and we don't look at what the intent is behind the bill. This is basically to be a short-term fix. I don't think anyone wants to have their parent in their backyard for the rest of their lives. I think this is when all of a sudden something comes up and maybe you don't have the chance to remodel. And when you talk about why wouldn't they want parents in their homes, to make a bathroom ADA compliant starts at about $10,000 and goes up to what, $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, it depends. And that's a big cost for a family who probably can't afford it. But maybe mom or whoever is going to be using the pod can afford to put, you know, a house like this in the backyard for a while. So I hope we don't get so busy figuring out how it might disturb the neighbors and do everything like this, that we don't look at what the intent is. It's for short term. It's for cost efficiency for everyone. And when you talk about local control, I would say this person right now would rather have local control over what happens to my parent than what I can afford to do. And so I really hope, and it kind of makes me mad that, you know, a little bit, that I couldn't do what I want to take best care of my parents. And for the first time in my life, I've had to do that this summer. And it's not an easy thing to do. But I do want to make sure that they have the best care. And I think that is what the intent of this is.
And if it comes down to me, quite frankly, I couldn't put one of this in my house because we have a walkout, so there's a hill. It wouldn't work for me. But I don't want to see somebody not being able to take care of their parent because they can't afford to update their bathrooms for a short time, which takes a while. I mean, a remodel of a bathroom takes you a while. So I really want to say I hope that we look at taking care of the folks who have been loyal to their cities, because I will tell you, if I couldn't do this in my city, I would move to where I could. And we have had clients, we've had a remodeling company for 30 years. They wanted to make a little suite for a handicapped brother. And because the city did not allow them to have what they would consider a duplex setting, and that they could not put a kitchen for her brother, who had handicaps but still could function by himself, they moved out of city limits to do it. And they did it very quickly. And I think sometimes we get so busy what could happen, what might happen, the zoning, blah, 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 that we don't look at people will move. They will leave. And if you're not kind to senior citizens, I will tell you right now, since they are going to be the largest group, they are not going to be there. You don't have to worry about it. Am I passionate about this? You bet I am. And I know I've worked with cities for 30 years on remodeling projects. And I know, you've got to look at all the bad things, but I hope you also keep in mind what the intent is, how passionate people are about this. I mean, I'm lit up right now just thinking about it, that you do keep this in mind. And yes, the city needs to work with it. Maybe instead of saying, you know, we don't want to put up the fires with neighbors, we look at this as a way to say, you know what, neighbors, it's time you get over this stuff and we get together, because it could be you 6 months from now, whatever. And hopefully, you know, I don't know if I can handle my dad living in my backyard for too long. I love him dearly, but we are the same. And, you know, that's not what the intent is. That truly isn't what the intent is. The intent is short-term ADA compliant, which is a big deal for a lot of folks who probably can't afford to do the remodeling in their own home. But this is a way for them to have the local control over what happens to the care. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tyson. I'll give you a moment at the end of the questions if you wanted to respond to anything that she had passionately just said. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I still think this is a good idea. And perhaps we need to test it a little bit to see what the reactions are going to be in the cities and so forth. But I have a question for Mr. Johnson is, do we have any other examples of preemption of city rights for something of this nature?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, so land use planning and zoning is a pretty complicated section of law, so I'm not going to try and give you an accurate guess on whether we have any specific one, but what I can tell you is what is written into this same section of statute is the procedures for doing a variance from the existing local ordinances. So we do have requirements, for instance, of you know, how we need to do subdivisions, how we need to do various decisions on land use planning, and actually for how that plays out at the city level, I think Mr. Lauder can tell you what they have restrictions on directly, probably better than I can.
Actually, I'll let the assistant director deal with that.
Yeah. Ms. Gunlock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm not sure I can fully understand your question, but if somebody proposes to do something in a neighborhood and the local ordinance doesn't allow it, there are potentially two options. One is a variance, and that's an option if maybe the underlying use is allowed, but there's some performance-related item that doesn't fully comply. So an example there would be maybe we're debating whether or not the aesthetic or the exterior materials requirements meet the minimums in this bill. You could apply for a variance for that. But the actual use, whether or not you could have another dwelling unit on a single-family residentially zoned property, that is not really something that you could apply for a variance. So the second option would be to apply for an amendment to the local zoning ordinance where you could write it right into the local zoning ordinance. So very similar to, you know, a bill where you draft regulations that are written right into the local ordinance, and then the city council would have the ultimate authority of whether or not to approve that. And I'll completely agree that, you know, at the local level, sometimes that can take some time in some communities. Other communities maybe can do it a little bit more quickly.
So, Mr. Chair, if I could just follow up very briefly.
Representative Newton.
And this goes back to something that Representative Tease was mentioning about, you know, being passionate about this sort of thing. You have someone go to the hospital, you don't necessarily know that they're going to have to be restricted in some way. And this takes the process of getting through planning and zoning and then going to the city council can take a couple of months, as you know. And so I think as Representative Peterson works on this, there has to be some kind of an expedited process that's involved with this as well to make sure that we can move this sort of thing through if it is only a temporary setting. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Newton. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have served on a city council, and I can tell you we got into some very controversial things when you're going against zoning. We were trying to get rid of the vans that were there, the RVs, et cetera, and that turned to be a very controversial issue. I do want to see this going forward because I can see that, you know, as we go forward, it is a very interesting option. But I do have real reservations against the state mandating the codes. So I guess my question to Mr. Johnson is, do you see a way where the League of Cities can possibly get all cities to look at this in a short-term frame so that we don't have to mandate it at the state level, but at least the cities have already looked at it?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, members, I definitely cannot assure you that I can get all cities to consider any particular issue. We have 853 cities in the state of Minnesota. All of them have an elected body that was elected by their residents to make the decisions on land use planning and zoning in that community. And this also affects every township and every county and all of their elected bodies that do land use planning and zoning for their communities. So there are a lot of people that would need to decide we want to prioritize this and look at this. And I think the way this typically works on other issues, and Mr. Chair, to get to an issue that was raised earlier, this creates a new category. This creates a permitted use that we must permit. Normally, a permitted use is just defined as something that is allowed under local ordinance, not something that is required by state statute. And this is actually creating a permitted use category for this particular land use. So it takes away all the local discretion, and we certainly are raising this issue. It's already been in several of our publications that go out to every city in the state. We're making sure that the issue is being discussed and learned about by our cities. But it is still going to be up to each city to determine whether it's a solution that they feel they have a need or a desire to investigate further right now. And they all have the authority to do that.
Okay. Thank you. And I just have one comment regarding the public safety issue. It would seem to me if somebody applied for a city permit that it would be a given that you could tell the police and fire to put this on their list of information if there was an emergency at those addresses. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Mason. Any final brief comments?
Mr. Chair, just a kind of a general comment is we absolutely agree with the, I think, broadly felt desire to find some creative solutions to this problem. Because it's not going to be a lesser problem, and being heartfelt about it is not in any way wrong. I just went through this with my parents and my grandparents. So thing I would say is that absolutely, if what is needed is handicapped accessible lavatory facilities and it's not really simple to do for the house, this is a solution for that possibly. However, this bill is not aimed only at handicapped accessible needs. It is defined as anyone with physical or mental needs for recuperation. And so my point is more, in many cases, the need of a handicapped accessible 300 square foot or smaller structure is not what is necessary for the recuperation. It's just a convenient place for it to happen. And is there also maybe a need to evaluate whether it's the right place for that to happen? And our cities do not have the expertise to make that decision. So we very much will continue working with the author. We are not of a mind that this is something that is on its face a bad idea, but we do want to make sure that we are responsible for dealing with the what-ifs. We do have to worry about what if somebody abuses this or misuses this, because we're the ones that end up having to try and deal with that after the fact, and it's very difficult. But we will be continuing to work on the problem, and we appreciate the committee's time to let those concerns be known. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on the amendment, the DE1 amendment? Seeing none and seeing no further questions from the committee, all those in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment as amended signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The DE1 amendment as amended is adopted. Any final words from Representative Peterson? Seeing none. Any further discussion from members? Seeing none. All those in favor, I will renew my motion that House File 2497 be recommended to be re-referred as amended to the Committee on Government Operations and Election Policy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion prevails and House File 2497 is re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections Policy as amended. Finally today, members, we have House File 2851. I will move House File 2851 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. I'm not aware of any amendments and have asked Danielle Pinelli and Sean Williams from House Research to walk through the bill. This is the codification bill that came through the omnibus bill last year during the value-based reimbursement. We had asked the reviser and nonpartisan staff to go through all the codes. They have spent a lot of time since September even before going through what we have for language and where we're going with this, and have done yeoman's work on what we have here. And so I'll ask them to walk through this quick, and we'll go with that from there.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 2851 is the recodification of Nursing Facility Statutes Bill. This is something that was included in the Nursing Facility Payment Reform Bill last year. There was a reviser's instruction instructing the reviser's office in consultation with nonpartisan staff on both the House and the Senate sides, the Department of Human Services and stakeholders to go through the nursing home payment statutes and rules and to do a recodification. So this bill is the result of all of that work. We basically started working on this in June and have been working on it all throughout the interim. We've gone back and forth with DHS staff and stakeholders several times, received a lot of feedback. And so this is the bill. It's quite extensive. We had initially hoped that we would be able to just do a reviser's instruction moving sections from one place to another, but it became clear fairly early on in the process that was not going to be possible with the amount of changes that needed to be made just to reorganize the language, make terminology consistent, clarify language. So what we're doing, or what we're proposing to do here, is to move all of the nursing home payment language from Chapter 256B into a new Chapter 256R. The one piece that we didn't deal with is the property rates language. Since the Department of Human Services is working with stakeholders right now to come up with a new property rate system, we've left all of that language alone in 256B. If a proposal comes forward to have a new property payment system, there is a space in the new chapter where that language could fit in the future. The other thing that I would mention is that the one spot where we did quite a bit of rewriting of language just to make it more clear and understandable is with the other payment rates, and I can have Mr. Williams describe that if members are interested.
Are members interested?
No.
In their hearts they are. any questions for them? Representative Lilly?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. We were able to have an opportunity to visit with the House staff. So they came and talked to some of us members, so we're pretty comfortable with the bill.
They absolutely did their due diligence on this one, for sure. Not that they don't do it with any other, but does anyone else wish to testify on this bill? Seeing no one else, I just do want to again thank the nonpartisan staff for their work on this, because it was such a long process with this. By name, Danielle Pumnelli, Sean Williams, Elizabeth Harkvist, Liam Clarkvist, Liam Monahan from the Senate, DHS staff, and the stakeholders for what they have here. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2851 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails, and House File 2851 is re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. The meeting is adjourned.